Welcome back to Current State here on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. The alewife was once the scourge of the Great Lakes. The small silver herring made its way into the basin through the St. Lawrence River in the late 19th century and proceeded to wreak havoc on the ecosystem. If you were around in the 1960s, you might remember the stench of thousands of dead alewives washing up on Great Lakes beaches. But now, scientists are concerned with the decline in the population of this invasive species and how the shrinking numbers of alewives could impact their main predator, the popular Chinook salmon. To find out how the alewife moved from unwanted invader to a critical link in the food web, Current State's April Van Buren talked to Randy Claremont, a fisheries research biologist for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. He told her that the devastating impact alewives had on the Great Lakes were made possible by another invasive species.
The alewife effects were indirectly also linked with the decline of lake trout populations, and lake trout suffered from the impacts of overfishing, but primarily the mortality from invasive sea lampreys. So without a top predator control, alewife populations became so abundant that they influenced almost every aspect of the food web, including competition with native species for food, preying on native fish larvae or early recruits, driving down populations, but also fouling beaches, clogging intake water from plants, et cetera. So their impacts were widespread.
And so the solution to this problem that ultimately got implemented was to introduce salmon into the Great Lakes to eat the alewives, to introduce a predator. Can you talk a little bit about how we arrived at that solution, who came up with it, and why they thought that this was the best idea?
Yes, certainly. And this story has been well told in the past, but it was Howard Tanner and Wayne Todi who were really spearheading the effort to bring in Pacific salmon into the Great Lakes Basin. And they were looking at that time for a predator that would grow quickly, that would consume a lot of prey fish and be able to bring some integrity back to the food web by establishing that top predator niche. And, you know, so it was an innovative idea, and it was controversial at the time, and today probably wouldn't even happen. But it was well needed, and the effects were seen quickly as the populations of salmon expanded rapidly and served as a good biological control.
Was there a risk, though? Were people worried about what if this goes wrong?
Absolutely. I mean, we really had no idea at the time if Pacific salmon would be naturalized to the system, and if they did, what would happen if their population started to reproduce on their own? Yeah, there were a lot of unknowns, and we spent a lot of time researching or understanding how the Pacific salmon populations have changed in the Great Lakes, how they've become naturalized, and how sustainable they may be in the future. And so it's really critical as we've introduced these fish and we've developed a sport fishery to understand what is happening in the populations, how much control do we have over the populations, and what can we do to, in our management, to build a better balance, to provide stability in the predator-prey community.
And one of the things that's disrupting that balance right now is that we've been seeing a big decline in the alewife populations in the Great Lakes. Can you talk to me a little bit about what's behind that decline and what sorts of consequences it might have for the salmon fishery?
Yeah, I can definitely tell you that the information that we collected was really helping us manage the salmon and prey fish community. But unfortunately, the fish community didn't stay stable. In other words, we've had continued introductions of non-native species beyond just dealing with the alewife salmon paradigm. These new introductions with zebra mussels, quagga mussels, the bloody red shrimp, round gobies, et cetera, have changed the food web, and the food web continues to change. And with the introduction of zebra and quagga mussels, we really saw a shift in the way the nutrients flows through the system. And those nutrients are really sequestered now near shore and aren't transferred offshore to produce the prey fish that would feed salmon. So this change really wasn't a salmon alewife paradigm, but was really driven by all these new invasives we've had in the last couple decades.
Randy Claremont is a fisheries research biologist with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. We're talking about the causes and consequences of a recent decline in the alewife population of the Great Lakes. How direct an impact does the alewife population have on salmon? Do salmon have other sources of prey, or is it really a direct link between the number of alewife and the number of salmon?
Yeah, when you look at the introduction of Pacific salmon, it makes a lot of sense that Wayne Todi and Howard Tanner considered Chinook salmon in terms of a control for alewife. They're really designed to feed in the open water pelagic zone of Lake Michigan, and therefore they key in on alewife populations more than any other predator. That also makes them extremely dependent upon alewife-type prey. And so as the alewife populations have declined, we've seen a direct response in the Chinook salmon and to some extent the coho salmon populations across the Great Lakes, not just Lake Michigan. Other predators, however, can shift to different prey items as the primary prey, like alewife, might become scarce. Unfortunately, the Pacific salmon, they don't.
And I have to say that it does seem a little ironic that the decline in this species that was really this plague in the Great Lakes that was upsetting this balance, that the decline is now what we're worried about. I'm wondering, since salmon weren't a native species, they were introduced to deal with the alewife problem. What would be the major consequences now that the ecosystem has kind of shifted of letting the salmon fishery and the alewives die out together?
So the way I look at this is it's easy to think about a single species in terms of what is the appropriate management approach. So we could just say that the lake isn't conducive to alewife anymore, therefore we should not think about salmon but think about another predator. And the truth is the Great Lakes were a relatively young ecosystem. And as you start to see these changes, it did make the Great Lakes very vulnerable to invasive species. But our reactions to those introductions, those invasions from non-natives, really becomes critical. And what I mean by that is as things change, we should change as well. And we should promote a fishery that is both diverse in terms of the prey fish community, but also the predator community.
I'm wondering, because it's such a complicated ecosystem and you have these variables that are constantly changing, how does the DNR lay out a plan for the future of the salmon fishery or native species when so much is changing? How do you account for that uncertainty of the future when you don't know what species might be landing in the Great Lakes next?
Yeah, so I'd say the first thing is the DNR doesn't approach the challenges of managing the fishery in a vacuum. We do so with strong support and collaboration with all of the anglers and constituents across the lake, but also with all the other agencies that this is a shared resource and they're highly vested in as well. Through those collaborations, we look at all the changes and we respond with the best available data and looking at both the risks and the potential benefits of any decision, whether it be stocking of native species such as lake trout or continued stocking of desirable non-native like species like the Pacific salmon. So, these decisions really have to be supported by all of those involved because this is a highly valuable resource and one that is shared across the Great Lakes region.
I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the specific solutions that are being looked at right now to deal with the declining alewife population that then impacts the salmon fisheries. What options are there for helping to stabilize the populations of those fish?
Yes, absolutely. And I will say some of the actions to help stabilize the populations of salmon and alewife have already occurred. So we've seen these changes occur in the last 10 years, and collectively, the agencies managing Lake Michigan have decided to scale back stocking dramatically, coordinated stocking actions. So we've made some of those adjustments. In addition, the state of Michigan has liberalized harvest regulations, encouraging harvest to remove some of the individuals or some of the salmon out of the lake because we saw the declining trends in prey fish. And we are going to measure the responses to see how the prey fish population or the alewife population is responding. If additional actions are necessary, we'll work with the anglers and the other agencies to evaluate all the options from further stocking reductions to other changes that we can make to bring some balance in the predator-prey community. But we also have to realize we don't have full control. It's a large system, And there are things changing that we can't control. And so we'll make the appropriate actions. But in the end, the lake is going to have a lot of say in what the alewife and salmon populations will look like in 10 years.
I've been talking to Randy Claremont. He's a fisheries research biologist with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. And we've been talking about the impacts of a recent decline in the alewife population and how that's impacting the salmon fishery in the Great Lakes. Thanks so much for talking to me, Randy.
April, I really appreciate it.
For Current State, this is April Van Buren.
And this segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.